This is the Fighting the Good Fight podcast, defending taxpayers and solving their tax problems, with your host, Patricia Gentile. Patricia Gentile is a taxpayer defense attorney, CPA, the founder of New England Tax Relief, and Patricia L. Gentile Coaching. With 40 years of IRS expertise and experience, she has successfully defended and resolved difficult IRS situations for hundreds of taxpayers. Patricia coaches tax professionals to confidently identify their client's IRS problem and create a successful resolution plan for them. As a fierce advocate, a creative strategist, and solution finder, fighting the good fight with Patricia Gentile is both her passion and purpose to help tax professionals successfully resolve their clients' tax problems.
Welcome, everyone, to the Fighting the Good Fight podcast. I'm your host, Patricia Gentile. Over the past year, my guests have been tax and legal professionals with an expertise in a particular area that resolves their clients' tax problem. Today, I'm going to go a little off topic with my guest, Thomas Bruckner. Tom is the founder and president of Senior Financial Resources, Inc. in Nashua, New Hampshire. He is a financial educator, radio talk show host, public speaker, published author, and an insurance professional to nearly 900 of his own clients spread throughout 29 states and 5 countries. Tom is a nonprofit financial literacy educator with the Society for Financial Awareness, SOFA, which is a nonprofit public benefit corporation with the mission of ending financial illiteracy in America, one community at a time. Tom also has taught classes at local colleges, universities, and conference centers from Maine to California. I have known Tom for 30 years now and regularly listen to his radio show, Retirement Intelligence with Tom Bruckner, which airs every Friday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on WFEA in Manchester, New Hampshire. After listening to Tom's January 3rd and January 10th radio shows, I wanted him to discuss here today the 5 areas he believes will have an impact on creating a bull market in 2025. There's a quote up on Tom's conference room wall that I think this is appropriate, and it's from Sir John Templeton. Markets are born on pessimism, grow amid skepticism, mature amid optimism, and die in euphoria. The time of maximum optimism is the best time to sell. And with that all being said, let me welcome Tom Bruckner to the show.
Thanks for having me, Patty. Yeah, so that quote, that made it onto our classroom wall 10 years ago because I thought John Templeton was just so spot on. So let me just reiterate it again. Bull markets are born amidst pessimism. They grow amid skepticism. They mature amid optimism, and they die. Bull markets die in euphoria. So the best time to sell is when everybody's buying. So there's another quote by John Templeton. He said the most dangerous words in investing are, quote, this time is different. So when we study market history, we go back, 100 years, we look at the rate of return of the S&P 500. It's 8.3% with dividends reinvested. That doesn't mean that every year you're going to earn 8.3%. That means some years you'll earn 25 and other years you'll lose 16. The average bear market decline, when you define a bear market as a 20% pullback from the most recent high, the average bear market decline is minus 41%. So what I encourage our class attendees at the local colleges and universities where I teach to ask themselves is, can you afford 2 years into retirement, a 41% loss on money that it's taken you 4 decades to save?
Ouch.
And of course, the universal answer to that is hell no. No. I hopefully, Tom, you're gonna show us an alternative here, and of course we do. But what I wanted to talk about today, when Patty and I connected by phone, is that there are now 5 macro trends happening, gathering steam, so to speak, like a gathering storm, that I think are indicative of a pretty stable bull market to come. Now, it may not be, the 25% gains that we've seen here the last 2 years, but it could very well be in the mid-teens again. And again, that's double market history, which is 8.3. So let me just list those. First and foremost is a pro-growth, low-regulation administration being inaugurated and coming back to power again. We know what President Trump did during his first term because in June of 2020, an organization known as the National Bureau of Economic Research published a report that said that in February of 2020, we had the strongest economy we've ever had across all data points, going all the way back to when record keeping first began in 1856.
Wow.
So the strongest economy we've ever had, and I remember thinking, and I think I might have shared this with Patty at the time, I never thought we'd see an economy like the one Reagan gave us back in the 80s. I never thought that would happen again because that lasted, George H.W. Bush was Reagan's third term. Bill Clinton was Reagan's fourth and fifth term. And it even lasted, the momentum from that, from those policies and the tax cuts that Reagan got passed, that even lasted into the term of George W. Bush. So here we are. We had COVID, obviously. In fact, February of 2020 was when Dr. Fauci said to the president, "Mr. President, I'm sorry, but I think we've got to shut it down." And you all remember what happened after that, right? 2 weeks to curb the spread turned into 2 years. It medicine lost credibility, but it also affected the economy and it affected the markets. So where are we now? Well, we're obviously well past COVID. So going back to my first point, and that is the incoming administration, they are pro-growth and they are anti-regulation. So if you assume that Trump hardly knew what he was doing the first time around and has had 4 years to study his mistakes, that first go around since, and now he's coming in with a cabinet that is just staffed to the gills with excellence and competence, I think we're going to see that there's, I don't know how you bet against that. Okay. If you're a bear, if you're bearish, if you're a skeptic about the markets, how do you bet against that by itself? All right. And then the next macro trend that we're going to see is the end of the war in Russia and Ukraine. A lot of people don't know that the world gets 40% of its fertilizer from eastern Ukraine and southern Poland, an area that for the last 3 years has been a battlefield. So when 40% of the world's fertilizer goes offline, the remaining 60%, the price that farmers are paying for the remaining 60% goes through the roof. And is it any wonder that although we get our farmers get their fertilizer from Canada, is it any wonder that that grocery prices are up 23% in the last 3 plus years? Okay, so when that fertilizer supply goes back online, not only will world fertilizer prices come down, but crop output per acre will go up again, and grocery prices for produce in particular will come way down again. It's going to take months, not weeks, but it'll eventually happen. And I fully expect it to be implemented, or the benefits of that to be implemented by late fall, early winter of 2025. So the third macro trend is a return to sound energy policy, to the export, to the domestic production of liquefied natural gas, and in particular, diesel fuel. A lot of people don't realize that the world economy runs on diesel. Any industrialized economy, you can't unload a tractor trailer without a diesel forklift. You can't transport produce from Mexico or from any shipping port in the U.S. where it comes in from overseas to the grocery store's loading dock without an 18-wheeler that runs on diesel. It literally affects the price of everything that sits on a shelf or hangs on a hook in America. Whether you're at Hobby Lobby, Home Depot, Lowe's, Market Basket, Hannaford, Stop and Shop, wherever you go for what you buy, the price of diesel impacts the price of those goods. So when diesel prices come back down again, you remember when Trump left office, regular gasoline was $1.86 a gallon. Okay, we are well over $3 a gallon still right now under Biden, under what's left of Biden's administration. So just domestic energy reproduction is going to make a huge difference. Right now, we are importing far dirtier oil from Venezuela and Saudi Arabia, dirtier in terms of how not cleanly it was produced. Okay, Saudi Arabia and Venezuela do not have the environmental standards that the U.S. has. They don't have the environmental technology in place that we have, and they don't have the OSHA regulations regarding safety that we have. So their oil rig workers, if you will, do it far more dangerously, and the end product is far dirtier. So, you know, when I talk to people, and again, my major in college was not finance, it was actually environmental science. And I actually spent 5 years working on offshore oil rigs from the age of 19 to the age of 24. So, you know, in an earlier life, this is more than 40 years ago now, I had some knowledge in this area. So when you look at all of that and you say, well, why would we want to shut down domestic production using the argument of pollution and then turn around and watch Venezuela and Saudi Arabia pollute the planet far worse than we would have, and then import that oil to the United States? It just made no sense whatsoever. The cessation, when Biden came into power, he stopped the export of liquefied natural gas to Europe, forcing Europe to buy it from Russia, which ended up funding Putin's war machine. Same thing with Iran. The mullahs were broke under Trump, and they were able to sell their oil again on world markets to other countries that needed it, and that funded their ability to export terrorism, to provide Hezbollah and Hamas with rockets and munitions. And that, of course, played into Hamas's ability to attack Israel on October 7th. So just to recap so far, the return, macro trend number one is the return of the Trump economy. Macro trend number two is the cessation of the war in Ukraine and the impact on fertilizer prices. Macro trend number three is energy production, domestic U.S. energy production, which brings me to macro trend number four, and that is the continuation of the artificial intelligence revolution. And I say revolution because it is very much like the industrial revolution of the 1880s and 90s, right? The advent of the automobile, the cotton gin, the gasoline, you know, the gasoline motor industry. In the late 1990s, we had the technological revolution, right? We had the advent of the internet and computers. And here we are now in 2025. The last 2 years, we've been marveling at how a small handful of companies have led the market higher, most notably NVIDIA and their compadres in the artificial intelligence arena. Nothing that I'm seeing right now on Wall Street tells me that that is going to slow down anytime soon. In fact, everything is telling me to prepare for a doubling and even a tripling of that impact. in the markets in 25 and beyond. So that brings me to the last one, and that's macro trend number five. And this is our old friend, the Federal Reserve. For years, we've been saying on Wall Street, don't fight the Fed. When the Fed is being accommodative, when they are keeping the punch bowl spiked, when they are suppressing the yield on the things that compete with stocks, literally, there is no alternative. TINA was the acronym. TINA has been alive and well on Wall Street since pretty much the financial crisis in early 2009. The Fed literally kept their thumb on the scale. They kept their boot on the neck of everything that competed with stocks. You may remember in that roughly 11-year period of time there, if you walked into a bank and you saw the banner beside the teller window, it said 12-month CD, 0.3% APR. And that went on for 9, 10, 11 months. So we've got the opposite of that now, but the Fed is once again cutting. They have cut three times for a total of a full percentage point. And they've told us that they are going to continue to cut in 2025, albeit only probably two more times. The point is, what investors should hear in that is not that, oh my gosh, they're not going to cut six times the way we hoped. What investors should hear in that is that they're not hiking. And if they're accommodative, if they're going to continue to cut in 2025, the things that compete with stocks, like bonds, like structured notes, like CDs and other instruments, are not going to have as good a run as they had in the last 2 years. So I think the stock market is, you know, it's a reflection of where people's hopes and dreams are. Investors have a pretty good handle on where they think the economy is going to be in 3 to 6 months. This week, we've seen earnings come in. Patty, you know, the banks have beaten their both their revenue and their earnings estimates. A lot of companies are in that same boat. We've seen investor optimism, most notably in the National Federation of Independent Business, which is a small business trade group that polls their members every month. And we've seen the optimism index rise. The level was 96. They thought it was going to go to 101, and it actually went to 107.
Oh, nice.
Which is, it's an indicator that small business, and you've got to remember, small business is 68% of job creation in this country and 70% of GDP, gross domestic product. Our national income comes from small business. So when small business owners are positive, when they're optimistic going forward, when they're giving their pollsters a thumbs up, we're really excited about what's coming, that ought to tell you that that is almost macro trend number six right there.
All right.
Okay. So that's what I'm seeing. That's what we're telling our clients. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you push all your chips across the table and say, I'm in. If you are close to retirement, you definitely want to hedge that bet. There was a study done a few years ago by Roger Ibbotson, in which he concluded that if you have your money all in the stock market, right, you're 100% in the S&P 500, your odds of making it to 95 without living, without running out of money were only 60%. When you go 50-50, right, when you put 50% of your money in protected income, and the other 50% is in the market, your odds improve from 60 to 77%. But what Roger found really compelling was that when you increase that 50% allocation to protected income by only 14% to 64%, you increase your probability of success from 77 to 98%.
Wow. Just for the listeners, what would fall under the definition of protected income?
So if you have a government pension, that's a sure thing. If you have a pension with an employer like a major defense contractor that is not likely to get bought by a multinational in the next 30 years while you're retired sitting at home counting on that pension, that would be protected income. What we're doing, because our firm specializes in retirement income planning for retirees and pre-retirees, what we're recommending, we're using something called a fixed index annuity with the GLI rider. GLI stands for Guaranteed Lifetime Income, meaning that you're placing a portion of your money with a custodian, usually a major insurance company, that will guarantee you an income after a year or two or three or six of incubation, depending upon your age and when you want to retire. And that when you turn that income on, if either you or your spouse live long enough to actually deplete the account value to zero, i.e. to run out of money, that insurance company will continue to pay you that same annual salary that you were earning before as long as you're alive.
Wow.
So if you run out of money at 87, but you're still alive at 93, the checks are still coming. So you can run out of money, but you can't run out of income. And when you ask retirees and pre-retirees what their number one concern is, for 10 of the last 11 years, it has been outliving our money. That's been their overwhelmingly number one concern. The only time it wasn't the top concern was in 2022, when the market lost 33% after COVID. So that's our formula. It's Roger Ibbotson's formula. As I said, it's 64% protected income. Now, the other 36% should be in the market. And you don't need to have bonds there, because the 64% has fulfilled the mission of bonds, i.e. price stability and guarantees. The 36% you can now be more aggressive with, actually, and you can toggle back and forth between value stocks and growth stocks. Value for a recession, growth for a bull market like the one I think we're going into. And then, you know, your 64% is income for the things you need. The 36% is income for the things you want. Those memory maker vacations. Sometimes it's you know, the purchase of a second home. Sometimes it's, you know, the leasing of, you know, an exotic automobile. Whatever's on your bucket list in retirement, that 36% is going to fund those specialty memories or those specialty purchases.
So the rest of Sir John Templeton's quote is, the time of maximum optimism is the best time to sell, because the end of his quote is, you know, the mature, I'll reread it, bull markets are born on pessimism, grow amid skepticism, mature amid optimism, and die in euphoria. So the time of maximum optimism is the best time to sell. We've got a new administration for the next 4 years, mm-hmm. that's got very aggressive agenda and so many areas of leadership in the cabinet, mm-hmm. and in department leadership. I mean, there is change everywhere.
Big time.
There is change everywhere. I don't know. I'm not hearing anything that is going to run as business as usual.
No.
I don't think I can think of a department. Maybe the IRS, actually. Maybe the IRS. Yeah.
I just don't see how you can bet against an economy that is this rife for change, and there's there's a pent up demand for economic success in this country.
Oh, definitely.
Big time. Yeah. And I think people are just fired up, ready to go. I think you're going to see it. I don't know when this is going to air. It'll probably air after the inauguration, but I think you're going to see it in the inauguration upcoming next Monday. I've been doing this for 35 years, and I have been a market skeptic for the better part of, I would say, for probably 9 of the last 15 years.
I am an absolute sponge when I listen to your research and your knowledge. I'm a sponge, because I know how much research you do.
Mm.
I mean, you don't want to speak about anything unless you have crossed the T's and dot the I's mm-hmm. in terms of your research.
Yeah.
How can anybody who's listening today get in touch with you to at least discuss with you what I loved was the, who was the gentleman you mentioned?
Roger Ibbotson.
Yes, Roger Ibbotson, right.
Yeah, he's a researcher extraordinaire. The guy's been on Wall Street for 50 years. He's a professor emeritus at Yale School of Management. He manages the Zebra Edge Fund. He is just a beloved grandfather of Wall Street. He's been around a long, long time. A lot of people really like him. He just quietly does his research, he and his team, and they're renowned for it. It's what they're really good at. And, you know, I appreciate your compliments on our research. My wife says to me, if somebody calls for me, Tom can't talk right now. He's marinating in data.
Ah,
what does that mean?
That is definitely
that
what
means,
you do.
That means he's got his headset on and he's listening to a podcast, or he's listening to, you know, some audio on CNBC or Fox Business. You know, some of my favorite experts, the people who have gotten it right the most often are the people I listen to. Those are the people I subscribe to. I follow them on YouTube and Instagram and X. And whenever they post something, I you know, I listen to it. I devour it. I chew it up. I set it to one side. And then, you know, next time I write a blog, or next time, you know, Randy and I record a show, or next time I've got a client coming in for whom that information applies, I share it. So to answer your question, our website is seniorfr.com. That stands for Senior Financial Resources. Our landline is area code 603-595-4990. Or you could listen to the radio show at 1370wfea.com. If you click on the schedule button, that will bring you to, and you scroll down, you'll see Retirement Intelligence with Tom Bruckner airs every Friday at 9 a.m. And you can actually click on that and go to all of the past shows and listen.
I definitely appreciate very much the time today. I believe this is usually a day off for you.
It is. Yeah.
And I appreciate that you met up with me here in your office to do this. Mm. I really do.
And my pleasure, Patty.
It's been awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
We hope you are enjoying this episode of the Fighting the Good Fight podcast. Make sure you don't miss a moment by simply subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We are also excited to announce that the Fighting the Good Fight podcast is now available on YouTube. Just search Fighting the Good Fight podcast with Patricia Gentile, and while you're there, give us a like. The Fighting the Good Fight podcast is a Park City Productions presentation. Learn more at Park City Productions 06604 on Facebook or Instagram. I'm Patricia Gentile, and we'll see you next time.